Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, you can also listen live on the homepage of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood isn't, go ahead, make my news. And my very special guest today, who's also, incidentally, from the fabulously fluoridated island change procrastination of New Zealand and the sunny slave South Pacific, where everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb thanks to the Fukushima radiation, which the Prime Minister thinks is a good idea. It's Billy McKee from Green Cross New Zealand. Incidentally, marijuana is a good treatment for radiation, I hear. Billy, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Billy. Nice to be here.
How are you, mate? Are you still wearing your ankle bracelet?
No, I've got my ankle bracelet off. I've appealed my charges and it's going back to court in about a month. So I'm sort of frantically, you know, working on my court case at the moment. I've had heaps of trouble with lawyers. You know, they just didn't want to do what I wanted them to do. So we're sort of, I've had to do it myself, and it's been a real struggle. But anyway, we're back to the Court of Appeal and see if we can get some progress out of that. It's not going to be easy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I doubt it would be. And you know what's interesting though, Billy, is that recently there's been a lot of movement on the cannabis front. It's getting legalized and decriminalized all over the show. There was a big debate on TV3, The Vote, where 70% of people came in and voted on various different platforms, all saying, yes, we want it legal. And what I found interesting about that, and the funniest part was, of course, Peter Dunn, the Associate Health Minister, who's funded by Big Tobacco and Big Liquor, saying, well, nah.
Exactly, eh? No budge, no movement whatsoever on a topic that's just so important. You know, especially for medical side of it, Vinnie, you know, because I've got some of people contacting me just about every day. They've got serious health issues, you know, they're dying, they've got heaps of pain on, you know, and they're sort of contacting me just about every day, sort of begging me for stuff, and it really hurts me to say that, you know, I can understand where you're coming from and that, but I just can't help you with any medicine. And it's just proven, especially that Rick Simpson oil, have you heard of that?
So yeah, especially we've had Rick Simpson on. We've had Rick Simpson on a number of times for the show.
Yeah, okay, oh, of course, yeah. So that's working really good. And I had a trial run of it for a while, you know, but I didn't have enough of it. But when I was using it, gee, I felt fantastic. I felt like I was young again, you know. Mm. Yeah.
So well, I thought I only had it for a couple of
weeks. Oh?
It does rejuvenate you. And also, Billy, your speakers are a little bit loud, so there's a tad bit of feedback, so if you can turn those down just a little bit.
Okay, how's that?
Much better.
Okay.
Yep. No echo. Okay. In terms of medical cannabis, what's the issue here? Because I think to myself, look, you've got a very sick person here. You got somebody who is about to die, and you know that there's a substance that is not dangerous, not prohibitively expensive, and will, in fact, cure or at least ease their condition, and then you refuse to give it to them on the basis of, air quotes, it's illegal. And in my opinion, that mentality is, in air quotes, immoral. So you've got a bunch of immoral sociopathic maybe I'm going a little overboard here. Maybe actually I'm understating that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Immoral sociopathic greedy swines.
There's also the ignorance of it. And you know what occurred to me during that debate that they had about cannabis on TV3 is that one side that was pro-legalization was using facts and figures, and the other side were using fear-mongering and lies with no evidence to back up their case whatsoever.
Yeah, well, it's hard for them to get evidence to back up
their case. It's because it doesn't exist.
Yeah, so they've got to rely on fear-mongering and lies.
I have this real great kind of like sick pit in my stomach. Whenever I think about cannabis legalization, you know, I've got two convictions, and the old saying goes, you know, your only beef with something is worth as much as your convictions, and I've got two of them, so therefore I can easily debate about this topic. I was talking to Dr. Green on the Skype just earlier, and the Dactory closed down December 2012. And they're moving to a new place in the little old heartland of New Zealand in Taumarunui, where they're going to be opening up an even bigger Dactory that's like twice the size.
Fantastic, eh? Yeah, I was talking to Dr. Green last night. It's absolutely incredible what he's done there. He's a real champion, eh?
Oh, yeah. And also, because of the timing of it, I would think that this whole cannabis debate in New Zealand wouldn't really have come about had it not been for the efforts of people like Dr. Green, who basically he obtained more media attention in the public eye than any other singular cannabis figure that I've ever heard of in this country's history. And I believe that maybe as a direct result of that, it's had an effect on the public consciousness.
Yeah, he certainly had an influence. Certainly put every effort into it over the last few years, quite a few years actually. He's put a huge amount of effort into it. He does deserve recognition for what he's done, getting the topic up there. The thing is, though, Vinnie, you know, if we weren't dealing with a corrupted government, we wouldn't have to go into all this effort. There's been heaps of evidence come through for a long, long time from different advisory groups on changing the laws, and the government just chucks it up straight out, you know, altogether. So that, to me, indicates that the government is quite corrupt, and they can just quickly, you know, ignore evidence-based recommendations and carry on with something that everybody knows is not working. It's just corruption.
Well, who's benefiting as well? You know, I was just thinking about this the other day. Is the old saying, ki bono, who benefits? And I don't see anybody benefiting from cannabis prohibition in the general public. Like, anybody who uses it while it's illegal, there's plenty of health benefits and so on and so forth, relieving of stress, symptomology, etc. Yet the people who never use it, I don't think they've benefited at all from it being illegal. You know?
Right. It would have cost them a lot because, you know, there's heaps of money being spent on the war on drugs, but plus also there's a lot of crime has been generated because of the prohibition laws. You know, I even know people that have been killed, you know, over cannabis. And that never would have happened if it hadn't been prohibited. prohibited. It would have been, you know, if it had been on the regulated market or something safe like that, these people never would have died. And you know, a lot of people get armed robberies and home invasions and beaten up and stuff like that. You know, and none of that would have ever happened. And yeah, lots of burglaries go on. People, you know, I've heard of people stealing, you know, stuff from people's houses, you know, like expensive stuff, and then swapping it for tinnies. I'm going, oh my God, you know.
It's freaking insane. Are there people out there who like flog off a 48-inch TV and then go into the local liquor shop and go, hey, bro, I'll give you this 48-inch HD TV if you give me a bottle of Jack? It just doesn't happen in a regulated market.
Yeah. It could never happen, though. And also, it's put the price up a lot. You know, the cost of producing cannabis is actually pretty low, but by the time you've got the prohibited market, it pushes the price right up. You know, I see some of the places over in the States where it's legalized now, the price is coming down.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you can grow it yourself, how much does it cost you?
Yeah.
Virtually nothing.
Yeah, very much. I know.
Yeah. And if that was the case... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, one of the main things that stops people growing their own is... well, there's two things, really. There's the police is a sort of a bit of an issue, but the main thing, I think, is actually people stealing it. You know, a lot in this area here, there used to be quite a few, you know, your backyard growers and stuff like that. But, you know, young criminals were going through the backyard stealing all the cannabis, so people, you know, just got to stop growing it, only for that reason. But, you know, that's sort of, you know, if people stopped stealing it, it would be all over the place. The police couldn't control that many plants and that many growers.
There's two bunches of people in this country that I really don't like. One being the police, and the other being the gangs, which are, you know, which are the reason why they're coupled together is because they're both fracking gangs who engage in criminal activity and make people's life freaking miserable.
Yeah,
a lot of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, and if it wasn't for cannabis or if it wasn't for the prohibition laws, neither of those gangs would have very much power. Would reduce their power hugely.
It's true. And I also wanted to talk to you, Billy, about your personal experience with this as well, and tell people the story about how you actually came to be the head of Green Cross New Zealand, if you would.
Okay. There's another guy, Greg, set up Green Cross, and him and a bunch of people in Auckland actually set it up. And they run it quite successfully for a couple of years, but Greg was... had AIDS, and he was getting really, really sick. So, you know, and he had difficulty carrying on with it, so he just asked me to take over Green Cross. So I actually didn't really want to, but I did anyway. And it's been a really difficult job to have, because you don't get any pay, and you get a lot of people ringing up, you know, and quite often late at night, and they're in a high levels of pain, and sometimes they've even, you know, they've even been using prescription drugs, which actually, you know, beats someone's brains around a little bit. You know, it's not good for your brain, some of that stuff. So you get a lot of phone calls from that, and sometimes it's quite abusive and threatening and stuff like that, you know, because they really want the medicine that will work for them. And I can't blame them at all. You know, they've used cannabis before, people are ringing up, and they know it works for them, but they can't get any, so they're ringing me up and putting pressure on me to get it for them. And it's been really difficult, especially because you know that they're genuine, you know that they're not just bullshitting, you know, like undercover cop, you know, he was just a bullshitter, but, you know, everybody else is just sort of, you know, they're genuine, and they've got kids that are dying and stuff like that, and I'll tell you what, mate, you really want to help them. Yeah, and that's actually how I got into trouble, was, you know, trying to help these people. And it, you know, even now, I still believe I have a moral right to help somebody. If someone says, oh, I'm sick, I'm dying, or something like that, you know, can you help me, or will you help me? You sort of, you know, you should help them. You know, if you see somebody drowning, or you see someone, you know, about to walk out in front of a car, and you can stop them and you can help them, well, that's what you do. Hey, you see young people, you know, I'm dealing with this quite regularly, young people that are suicidal and stuff like that. You know, if you can help them, you do. This is what you normally do. So, it's been a stressful job. I'm actually leaving Green Cross now. It's all been too much for me, and I'm going to sort of you know, I'm thinking about pulling out of quite a few things because the stress has just been up for me, and you know, I'm sort of, yeah, I'm having difficulty hanging in there, Vinny.
Well, I've found activism is a very thankless job, and the only thanks you get, well, actually, let me redefine that. Activism, yeah. You get a lot of thanks, but not a whole lot of support.
Yeah.
All right? Yeah. If people say, thank you for doing what you're doing, that doesn't help me, bro. Okay? You know? I mean, sure, thank you for saying thank you, but those are just words.
Yeah.
Where are your actions? What else are you contributing? How are you helping me? Because if you're going to say thank you to me for doing all this hard work, what about if you helped me do this hard work? What if you supported, you know?
Yeah, and then there would be not so much hard work for me. And you know, we tried to get the Cannabis Protest Weekly going at all the courts in New Zealand, you know, because there's heaps of people going up every week at court. We thought, right, if we can get all these people that are coming up every week to bring their mates along, and we all come along to court every week at all the courts in New Zealand, then we'll have enough people to actually shut the courts down. And if we can shut them down, this is how the government controls us, is through the courts. But the courts are actually a bit of a weak link. You know, if we had quite a few people there, and it's only, you know, a couple of mornings a week, and put that much pressure on it that they have difficulty functioning, then we'd possibly get some changes done to the drug laws there. I don't believe that we're going to get any changes done to the drug laws by begging for crumbs from the table from the very people that actually made these laws up and put us in this position. You know, they're not going to give us anything. They've said that quite.
Trying to say to the government, look, please stop being criminal scum. It's like negotiating with terrorists. You just can't negotiate with them, eh? They just take and destroy everything they touch.
Yeah, there's no end to them. And the other thing is, we tried to get protests going, focus on Peter Dunne, because he's another weak link, you know. But we just couldn't get the people that actually wanted to make an effort to come out for a day or something and you know, and sort of do some protest actions against them. They just wouldn't do it. So, you know, I sort of feel like I'm, you know, running a walker on my own, and it's too much to row on my own. So, you know, I've got, you know, my health has been going down steadily, and, you know, I'm sort of stuck in a career.
Well, hold on. We're coming up to break now. There's the music, Billy. We'll be right back in about 3 to 4 minutes.
Yep.
With more information on all of this, ladies and gentlemen. And if you want to support Green Cross, go to greencross.org.nz, I believe it is. Is that right?
Yep.
All right. Yep. Dang, I'm good. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Oh, go on, you buddy.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. I have, you know, I think I've actually put more New Zealand activists on air, on terrestrial radio, than any one person or any one news organization in this country's history. And that's quite an achievement for one person to organize by themselves. And it just goes to show you don't need massive organizations that have huge quantities of funding and million-dollar studios and so on and so forth in order to get the frickin' job that needs to be done accomplished. Because I think that what's wrong with humanity is that people have decided that they need to depend on others in order to get anything of worth accomplished. And I don't think this is the case. And I think history is on my side on this, that it's usually a small amount of very talented and or dedicated individuals who get things done and actually change the course of humanity. Whether or not I'm actually changing the course of humanity, I don't know. It's not really my goal. My goal is just to give some coverage to people who otherwise would get left out of the media because they're such a bunch of inept scum that they just couldn't be bothered. And also they're not that bright either. What's his name? Ian Wishart told me, and he was like one of the country's top journalists, Billy, that reporters are airheads. Okay, I want to get that on a plaque. you know, just on my desk or something. Ian Wishart, mainstream media reporters are just a bunch of airheads who are just wanting their next trip to Tahiti, and that's basically it. These are the people that you get to inform you, ladies and gentlemen, on a day, on a day-to-day basis. If you're listening to this show, you have suddenly joined an elite minority of people who know what the frack they're talking about. At least it's something nice, you know? And by the way, the reason why I'm saying this is because Billy has actually been supporting me for quite some time. You've got the automatic payments going into my my Kiwi Bank and everything, and that's helping me pay the rent, pay the food, pay the internet bills, and things like that. So he's an activist who's on the bones of his ass, and even he's capable of supporting me on a regular basis. Thank you, Billy.
You're well worth it.
Yeah, and at the moment, ladies and gentlemen, I'm having a real struggle. We don't have any money for food at the moment. We've got the rent covered. Internet bill's just been paid, but what's left over is not enough for food or the non-fluoridated water that we have to buy because this frickin' city won't get it out of the water. But Hamilton's just voted to get fluoride out of the water, but Auckland is just too dumb and too lazy, and we can't be bothered. We just want to drive around in our cars and sip our frickin' fluoridated lattes at various cafes around the city that are incidentally run by Chinese people. It'll be fine. Oh, God. But anyway, if you could please, ladies and gentlemen, do me a solid. Go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. There's a little PayPal subscribe button there. I want you to start donating on a monthly basis. If you are broke as frack, you can still afford $1 a month. If you are flush with cash, you might be able to afford $100 a month. And those options are there for you. And what do you get for that? You get ad-free archives and also the knowledge that I will still be here, still 5 days a week, broadcasting the truth and giving people the coverage that they fracking deserve. I'm doing the job that the media can't be bothered doing because they're too inept, too pathetic, and too controlled to get the job done right. Please, and I mean like right now, seriously, the situation is quite desperate. Please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, subscribe either through PayPal with your credit card or just make an automatic payment through the Kiwi Bank account there. And if you're unable to, say, do something regular, there's a little donate button there as well. And I must say, I've had so much support from so many people over the years that I don't own anything I'm wearing. You know that? I seriously, Billy, everything that I've got, everything that I'm wearing on my body and everything that is in this office around me has been given to me by other people. I would not be able to do this show if it weren't for the generous support of the listeners, okay? It's a symbiotic relationship here, and I feel obligated, because I've got this stuff, to use it for good, for you. Right, that's enough self-promo for one day. But I hope people take it seriously. Billy, where were we before we were coming off? We were talking about activism and how it doesn't pay off a lot of the time. Ironically, that's a good segue.
It's certainly a hard path to go down, eh? And even quite often I find the people that are, you know, that you sort of think that would be supporting you, you know, don't. You know, and it's sort of, you know, it's sort of disheartening when that happens, you know, sort of like, you know, people think, oh, these guys are just a handicap, they actually turn around and undermine you sometimes, and it just sort of takes the energy out of you. Yeah, so it's, and sort of, we've been trying other things as well, and it just seems, you know, it's just hard to get support. That's why I thought, you know, like, because you're doing the radio station and that, and you're doing such a good job, I thought, heaps of people have been donating to you, you know, you have money coming out of your ears and stuff. Yeah, which you should do. If everybody, you know, chips in a little bit, it won't be a problem. But, you know, from the sound of it, we haven't got enough food, but we're not doing that, eh?
So. Oh, well, I think I blame PayPal because I had a reasonable amount of subscribers and I had all the bills paid, everything was going sweet, and then PayPal froze my account, saying that I need to register as a charitable organization before I can continue. I'm not a charitable organization, am I? I'm just a person who was accepting donations from people. And so they froze my account, and I think there's still like $600-$700 in there or something like that that I can't touch. A lot of most of the people who were subscribed to me back in the day had their subscriptions cancelled and didn't renew them on the new PayPal account that I opened. So, you know, it's just took me quite a few years to build up that backlog of support, and with one fell swoop,
yeah,
gone. And yeah, I've been struggling ever since. For the last couple of months since that happened, have been really, really tough.
PayPal did the same to WikiLeaks, didn't they?
I don't know.
Yeah, because we were donating to WikiLeaks, and when that stuff started happening with Julian Assange, and then they were calling for more donations to, you know, when he was getting arrested and stuff and hiding out in England, and so they were calling for more donations for that, and, you know, like, if I've got some money, I'll donate, you know, to someone like that. And then PayPal wouldn't let the payments go through. So maybe not so accidental.
Yeah. Well, I remember at the time Sarah's car blew up. Well, not blew up like by the CIA or something, but the engine fracked out, and it was going to be more expensive to actually get a new engine than it would be to get a new car. Yeah. And the problem was we didn't have enough money for either of them. And the listeners were so very generous. There were two donors who gave me $500 a piece, a couple of others who donated reasonable amounts. And so we were able to get Sarah a new car. And that was at a really tough point because she'd just decided that she was going to quit her job and start her own business. And then all of a sudden, boom, her car blows up. You know, people can't tell me that God doesn't have a sense of humor. It's like, is God fracking with me? Yes, God is fracking with you. It's his job, okay? As soon as you start feeling comfortable or feel like things are going to work out, that's when he fracks you. and it's always the earthly bodies of really awesome people that basically bail your ass out at the end of the day. And that's how human... I mean, are humans at war with some kind of a dark, evil entity that just doesn't want us to succeed or something like that? I think we are, you know, personally. I've got some kind of a obscure spiritual belief that I'm like a force for good in this world, and I want to expose evil and try and protect people from it and help to heal them from it if they've suffered any of its effects at all. But, yeah, can't do it on your own, eh?
No. You need each other, and there is a lot of good people out there, eh, Vinny? You know, there's a lot of really determined activists out there, you know, that are sort of doing as best as what they can. But, you know, you get it in the neck from just about any direction when you're an activist, so, eh? You know, especially being a cannabis or reform activist, because, you know, as soon as you go to say something at, you know, meetings or something, they start going on, oh, you don't smoke pot smoking, you know, what would you know about it anyway? You know, and this is even if you're talking about wastewater treatment, you know, which has got nothing to do with, well, actually got much to do with pot, but in a way it has. But, because hemp is really good for cleaning up polluted water.
Really?
A little bit of a use. But as soon as you start talking about it, they just switch off. They've had extra hassles in their local area, and, you know, it's very similar around New Zealand. With all the councils, all their wastewater treatment plants, hardly any of them work properly. They're all polluting the environment and all costing us heaps of money. I mean, you come along to a meeting and say, oh, here's a, you know, how about looking at these sort of plans, like, you know, to clean up the water? Ah, what do you know about the pot smoking, you know? Well, you know, pot smokers, we spend a lot of time studying and we really care about things.
Yeah, I'd say they do. That's another thing that just really, really fracks me off about it, is that people who don't smoke pot think that everybody who smokes pot is this cliche, a crazed moron who's completely unsuccessful in their life and just sits at home all day playing video games and watching TV, never amounts to anything, has no brains, etc. I mean, you know the score. And
yeah.
all evidence is to the contrary in most cases. I mean, sure, those people exist, just like a bloodthirsty pedophile who rapes children and drinks their blood technically exists. But that doesn't mean every person who you don't like is instantly a rapist, bloodthirsty pedophile who drinks blood. Okay? Yeah. You know, they're throwing the baby out with the bathwater, as it were.
A lot of cannabis smokers actually do really well, so you know, it's just more smear tactics, eh?
Yeah. I mean if they can't say the truth, then just lie about the person, try to discredit them, use ad hominem attacks, because that way, hey, you don't actually need to know anything or do anything. You just need to call people frickin' names like you're in the gosh dang schoolyard again. This is how I win my debates back in the day. I just call the person names, make everybody laugh at them, and then all of a sudden I'm right because everybody's laughing with me at somebody else who I'm abusing and attacking.
Yeah.
Good on you, mate. That's real grown up. You're real frickin' mature, aren't you? Otherwise, you know, stoners might actually have some kind of an input or be listened to or actually help to improve the fracking planet. But no, we don't want that. We just want to abuse them and think that we're better than them because we're abusing them.
Yeah, and yet, you know, the cannabis and the hemp industry is worth, you know, billions of dollars a year in New Zealand. If you sort of work it out per person, it's like a number of thousands of dollars each person per year that we're actually spending or we're losing one way or another just through the war on drugs. You know, it's all our food, it's all our fuel. You know, imagine if New Zealand was making its own petrol and diesel out of hemp. Well, you know, that's, you know, what that's about. I think about $7 billion a year with imports that we don't have to pay for. You know, that's a fair big chunk, though. I mean, when you start putting it into the food, you know, there's more billions of dollars in there. And when I've been eating that hemp seed and the hemp oil, I feel really good. My body feels good, and that's a pretty good indicator, right? And then when I'm drinking when I managed to get some of that RSO oil, that Simpson oil, when I was eating that, gee, I couldn't remember when I'd actually felt better. You know, so that means it's gone back a long time before I felt better, like 20 years or something, since I felt so good. You know, I just felt like I could, you know, when you're young, you feel like you can spring around and bounce around on your feet again. You know, and, oh, well, this is actually really nice. And I was staying focused and getting a lot of stuff done as well, you know. I've got a really busy life, a bit too busy, in fact, you know. So, so I've got all my stuff written down that I've got to do every day, you know, get out there and get it all done. I do suffer from depression quite a bit, you know. I've been stuck in a wheelchair for a long period of time. I'm sore all over, you know, so it's like easy to get a bit depressed. And yet when I'm having that Simpson oil, I'm sort of cruising around my wheelchair, and instead of feeling sad, I'm sort of thinking about stuff that happened years ago that was funny, and I'm actually laughing to myself, you know. It's a huge turnaround, you know, going from, I'm feeling really quite suicidal and stuff sometimes, so you're going from that to chuckling away and laughing to yourself about something that happened to you as a kid. So it's a huge turnaround. So it's just billions of dollars getting chucked away. And it's actually not really getting chucked away. It's what's happening is it's money that's going to the multinational corporations. It's going to the oil and fuel companies, the dolling companies that we actually don't really like anyway. I think you're going to come over here and do lots of billing over here. And, you know, they're going to spill oil over here. Anywhere they've been, they've spilled oil. So to think they're going to come here and not spill oil is just ridiculous. So that's going to destroy a whole lot of our coastline and a whole lot of our seafood that we could be eating as well, you know. So
and that's the least of our worries. There's also the fracking that's going on. I believe I saw a map that a activist Megan Manuka showed me, and I think that they've got something like 40 something fracking locations in New Zealand that they're currently prospecting, and each one of those locations is going to cost like millions of cubic litres of water just to do the process in the first place. On top of that, they're digging down and contaminating the fracking groundwater. Okay? Yeah. So, oh my God. We're going to depopulate this country by destroying it from land and sea, and with the chemtrails, the air too.
Yeah.
Ladies
and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the bleeding uranium in the mortar? What you know about AIPAC controlling the reporter? What's wrong with the world? People kill people that other people command. Middle East is a modern day attack on a native land. Project eugenics planned on the common man. Expand the military industrial complex. Annex or install you with chemical objects. Vex the psyop attacking your conscience. Next, your brain agrees with the offense. Political correctness. People are afraid to speak what they feel instead of what they're made out of.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's our final segment here with Billy McKee today. And we were talking about fracking just before, and we got cut off quickly by the break. And you were about to say something, and I forget what it was.
Well, I actually just wanted to know if you could tell me who knows where all the fracking sites are.
That would be Megan Manuka. I'll send you her her Facebook profile link. She's a great lady. And incidentally, she contacted me just a few days ago saying she might have some kind of a medical problem. But she's not sure. And getting scanned and what have you. So who knows? You might be able to help her too, provided you don't quit Green Cross.
What's that?
Provided you don't quit Green Cross all of a sudden.
I've got other people who are actually taking over parts of it for me, so it's sort of taking a bit of the strain off me.
Choice.
Yeah, I'll have a chat to them because it's quite amazing actually, you know, the health benefits you can get from, but, you know, mainly ingesting it actually, it seems to work better, you know, especially on, you know, like for cancer and stuff like that, it seems to work better if you can actually eat it in a concentrated form.
Yeah.
Then, yeah. Because smoking is nice if you're getting stressed out of this.
Well, you know, I found that, and what's interesting is that people have come out recently saying that if you are taking cannabis and it's not heated, you don't get high off it. Is that true? Like if you ate a handful of raw bud?
Yeah, but it could be true because I eat quite a bit of a raw myself. Yeah, you know, whenever I can, and just because I really like it. It tastes beautiful, especially just sort of put it in your, you know, a cup of hot water or something, or, you know, in your food. It just tastes so nice. But I don't think I do get stoned from it, from when I'm just eating it.
Mm. Well, see, yeah. I found that's quite an interesting phenomenon, isn't it? It's a substance when taken one way will get you high, and when taken another way it'll get you healed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty incredible, isn't it?
There's just so many amazing things about this plant, and it's just what I found interesting is I have conversations with people who are cannabis activists all the time, Billy. You know what they all have in common? Endless examples of things that cannabis or hemp is used for. Just endless. Yeah. Every 2 seconds, they're coming up with another thing. And you're like, wow, it does that too.
Yeah. Well, you'd be getting that stuff from Rick Simpson, as you know, the people that write in there on the benefits they've had from using it. You see his write ups on that?
What you mean, like getting rid of their depression, their cancer, and so on and so forth? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but even people that sort of saying, you know, I was seeing one lady just the other day, she'd had something wrong with her for like years and years and years, and they couldn't get anything, they couldn't help with it. And then she got like a cancer or something, and she started taking the Rick Simpson oil for the cancer, and it fixed up the other thing that had been causing the problems for years and years. And they didn't sort of realise at the time. And then she said, "Oh well, that's gone. You know, that must be fantastic." And there was one lady in Auckland from Green Cross, and she had tumours all through her stomach and her chest. You know, big tumours, nearly the size of a tennis ball. And she started using that RSO oil for about 9 months, I don't think it was quite a year. And then when she went back to the specialist, because they were expecting her to die soon, this is what normally happens when you've got lots of tumours all through your stomach and chest, is you normally die. And she went back to the hospital after about 9 months or 10 months, and they did another scan or something, what do they do on them? and you could see that she actually had the early scans and the latest scans, and you could see the latest scans, and they'd actually shrunk into themselves. The big tumours that were growing through had got, you know, smaller and smaller, and they shrunk into themselves. They were still there, but they weren't causing any problems, and she'd, you know, and she'd stopped having all the prescription medication, which had really ruined her life. She couldn't do anything, you know. She couldn't drive the car, she couldn't look after her kids, she couldn't take care of her husband, because she was so wasted out on these prescription drugs. As soon as she went onto the oil, she could do all that stuff. She could drive, she could be a mum again, you know, she could be a wife again. You know, running the kids around, cooking the meals. It's a busy life if you've got a few kids there. You know, so she was all back on top of that. And at the same time, she healed up. Hurts the
man,
brain,
that,
eh?
that woman needed to be put in prison. That would have done her health real good, eh?
Yeah, well, that's what would have. Yeah, she's terrified. You know, she's really, really scared of coming undone. So that's why she hasn't been able to go to the media or something. I said, oh, let's take this to the media, because we had so much proof. She even had, you know, overseas specialists she'd seen, and specialists in New Zealand she'd seen, and none of them could believe what had happened. They says, oh, how come that's happened? What's going on here? You know, normally you'd be dead like months ago. We expect you to be dead a year ago. You know, but then she's too scared to say anything to them. And she's still getting all the prescription drugs on them, off them. But
She could just tell them that she turned to Jesus. That'd really mess with their heads.
Well, I was trying to get it to say to them, look, this is what we're using, you know, to try to turn some of the specialists around. But they don't want to know about it then, guys, eh?
Well, they're too brainwashed. You know, this is the problem. Those frackers need to smoke a joint, okay, and deprogram a little bit. And incidentally, that's one of the psychological benefits of cannabis, is that you become resistant to brainwashing techniques. Yeah. Why do you think stoners don't like their bosses and quit their jobs invariably? They don't put up with BS for too long. They just can't handle it. It's just like, oh, it's mind control, bro. This sucks, man. I'm getting the hell out of here.
Yeah. I totally agree on that. You know, you just don't like putting up with crap anymore. And I think if you don't smoke cannabis, you can sort of discipline yourself and you can put up with the crap, you know. But once you have a smoke, you say, oh, look, this is just too much. You know, these guys are just full of it. I'm not going to put up with that no more. So it does make you a bit more of a independent sort of person, I think.
Yeah, well, independently thinking at the very least. And the other element is, I think Bill Hicks made a joke about this. Had all these people stuck in traffic, you know, getting angry and tooting their horns and stuff like that, and he just walks out to them and he goes, bro, smoke this. Oh my God, I was taking life too seriously. Exactly.
Yeah, but see, after that they'd have a smoke and they'd think, well, what am I stuck in this traffic for, you know? I'm paying off a car to get me to work that I don't really want to go to. You know, I'm paying off other things that I don't really want to be there, and they sort of, sometimes people just change their lifestyle and say, oh, I'm not going to do that anymore. You know, I can understand it, though. You know, I used to do the, you know, rushing into town every day and working all day in town, then in the traffic, going home again. And, you know, the weekend comes around, and I was just exhausted, man. I didn't even want to do anything. I just collapsed out for the whole weekend, and then, you know, it was another week of it. So, yeah. So I can understand why a lot of people are sick of doing that, eh?
Life is just such a really irritating thing if you take it too freaking seriously. And people are either taking life too seriously or they're taking themselves too seriously. And this is like a chemical compound. It's not even really chemicals, really, is it? I mean, a molecular compound, I think is the technical term. Which can cure pretty much anything that ails you. Are you really pissed off? Well, this will calm you down. Are you really sick? This will heal you. Are you really sick of authority figures? This will make you really, really sick of them.
This will get you to do something.
And it's just a waste of time otherwise to think in any way, shape, or form that prohibition is in any way, shape, or form good for anybody, okay? It's not good for your health. It's not good for your mind. I mean, all it is just poison and mind control. Okay, that's the alternative. You got, on the one hand, you got cannabis, which is good for your brain and good for your body. And on the other hand, you got prohibition, which destroys your mind and your ability to think critically because there's no freaking evidence behind it and people just follow it freaking blindly. And then on the other side, you've got freaking death because nobody's using it as a cure for many, many, many illnesses, which the mainstream medical industry won't admit that they're curable.
Yeah.
Evil, man.
It's evil, eh?
It's just one of these many evil things that goes down in society, and it's understated in a lot of ways. You know, people don't realize just the degree of suffering that goes through the human race as a direct result of this cannabis policy. Now, I think we're coming up to the end, Billy. We've got about 45 seconds. Have you got any websites or projects that you got going on that you need to give a quick plug for the listeners?
Yeah, the Rothschild Drug Wars is a good website to have a look at it, and that's how the drug wars all started off and how that got spread right around the world by done through the United Nations. So it got started off by the Rothschild family in the States and by corrupting the government, which is probably seems to be quite easily done over there if you've got lots of money. And then they sort of corrupted the United Nations and they forced the drug wars on everybody right around the whole world. And, you know, like as an example in New Zealand, you know, they say, oh, we're going to have prohibit cannabis, we're going to have a war on drugs in New Zealand, even though, and they based it on health, even though there had never been anyone go to hospital complaining about, you know, I need to come to hospital because I've been smoking too much cannabis or something. That never happened. So they still managed to, and there'd never been a death, of course, but they still managed to introduce these laws on health benefit. Well, you know, I can't see the health benefit.
No, neither can I.
These small rich people, families,
Yeah, that's about right. You know, it reminds me of that sheriff who him and his wife. I think he must have confiscated some brownies off some stoners or something like that, and not reported them, and then ate them himself, and then calls, and then he started to like trip out a little bit, and he calls up his own emergency services, and he goes, "Man, everything's going really, really, really slowly."
Those edibles, like those biscuits and that.
Billy, we've run out of time, mate. Yeah. Greencross.org.nz, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
Thanks a lot, buddy.